This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Party like a rock star, look like a movie star, play like an all-star, well, you know the rest. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Friday. Matt and Brett.
Boy, the intro.
It is. You haven't heard that song? The fourth line is the seller. Yeah. If you know what that song is, the fourth line, you're probably laughing your caboose off at the thought of me fulfilling that role. But hey, go team go. I did spend 3 years in Europe. I'm just going to let that hang out there. Brett, we have got Jay Bowler going to join us from The Racket. This is the guys that were from City Pages. They started their own online digital magazine, Racket, and they launched this, I believe it was this week. And we're going to have them on. We're going to talk with them a little bit about the launch, why they decided to come back at it, and a few of their stories. Actually, one story was really actually they're a very good public service. I mean, sometimes a news story crosses that line to public service. The Reformer, the report that they did on the with the trainee that was basically being told to do racist things. The Andy Mannix story about the Second Precinct destroying evidence. I mean, there are some things that become a public service. They are that good of stories. I'm going to give The Racket. If within the first week you're going to be knocking out a story like this, well, I think we have good things to come from them. That comes up at 4:30. Needless to say, Brett and I, the Howling Chimps, we are here for your pleasure until 6. Native Roots Radio, I imagine they're going to talk a lot about the arrests made out on the water protectors that were still occupying the state capitol grounds. That happened about 1 or 2 this afternoon, I believe, State Patrol. It was only a handful that were still there. But they did seem like there were some arrests that did happen there. Got to clear them out before we get to the no maskers. Brett, I've had an interesting day today. Charlie has gone back. My son, my oldest child, has gone back to college. And at the University of Minnesota, go Gophers! Anyway, he is living off campus this year. He is living in an apartment complex. And let me just say, it's a pit. Okay, so, you know.
Do you think he's listening right now?
No, thanks, Dad. He's not. I'm surprised some of his friends actually listen to the show. I have no idea why. I'm a bad influence, kids. You do not want to be anything. No. Bad children. But he doesn't. And I mean, I think I've actually trained my family well. So, yeah. Okay, so there comes the point, and this is a pretty common thing. Your kid at the University of Minnesota, particularly the University of Minnesota, I think this kind of goes with any university that's located within a large or decent-sized metro area. Your first year of college is generally going to be in the dorms. Immediately after you start your freshman year, you get friends start talking about, hey, next year we need to go get an apartment together. And they've got some kind of cool setups over there, some of the apartment buildings, the apartment is actually four separate individual bedrooms with their own bath, which is nice. And then they basically have a common area that they share where the kitchen is at. Okay. So each room has their own bathroom. He has his own room so he can do his own studying there, but he shares the kitchen and that's with three other guys.
That's a good deal if he's got his own bathroom, actually.
It's not bad. And as a matter of fact, I'm like, there are nights where I kind of, get out of line a little bit. A place like this wouldn't be bad. Is that third roommate going to show up? That's already coming.
Dad's moving in.
That would be the worst. Oh, that would be the worst. For my son, it would be, I'd do great. Cause there's lots of things to do with you, but, hey son, I'm just looking at the architecture and the history of this building. What are you up to? Oh, meeting friends. Well, you mind if I tag along? It would go wrong. So I'm moving in. And of course there were a lot of red flags. Do you remember your first apartment, your first real apartment?
Yeah, it was actually the same deal. Second year out of college, or in college, We decided to do that.
Was it a delightful experience?
Actually, it was a decent little apartment across from Augsburg College. can't remember the name of it, but right on Franklin Avenue.
Right on Franklin?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow, a good place, you say.
Yeah, actually, at the time, yeah.
Well, it no, I okay. The worst Augsburg, that it, before Augsburg starts sending us letters, yeah. I'm joking. That area actually is lovely. It is actually lovely.
The worst thing that happened was, I think I told you this before, someone stole a radio out of my 91 Maxima.
So, pathetic criminals, you're saying.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
It's like, where did my cassette deck go? So who would steal a cassette deck? Yeah, pathetic criminals over by Augsburg. Good luck with that. This place, okay, it wasn't bad. It wasn't great, though. I mean, it's my son was, because no one in our family smokes. He's like, Dad, I think that's just some dirt on the floor. I said, Charlie, those are burn marks on a carpet. It's like, photographed. I photographed every ding, everything that could come back and affect his deposit. I photographed everything.
That's exactly what my parents did.
And that's why he so wanted me gone. Yeah, wanted me out of that. Let me check out how this door jam is working. Dad, about time for you to go, isn't it? It's a new world for him. I said to him, okay, well, let's go to the bank. He had some cash. He'd been mowing lawns all summer, so he had some cash. He said, let's go deposit. I said, Charlie, you do not want to have a bunch of cash in your room. Go deposit. Let's go to the bank. Go to the bank. I said, well, where's your ATM card? It's back in my room. Oh, for God's sake. Really? Damn it. That's, I think, the exact term. So back down university I went. Got what we needed to get. Needless to say, it was a busy day. I'll miss him. He's right. He's not that far away from. Was it Huntington Bank? You know, Snob Bank. What is the name?
New stadium.
Who bought TCF? Huntington
Bank Stadium. Huntington. So upper class. And
Jesus, man, God, man. The marina not letting you in today. God. Huntington. Well, that's clashed up the joint a little bit. TCF. Just some initials. That's some pauper stadium. No, I, a Dynaman, deserve to have some brilliance, right, Nigel? Yes! Huffington! There it is. So good luck with that. You're gonna get so taunted by the rest of the Big Ten this year. It's not even gonna be funny. So you're over at Huntington Education Center Stadium or whatever that is. He's over by there. I got him moved in. It went well. We trimmed back. I will say one of his roommates already had like a 10-piece cooking set. And I'm like, I'm looking at the size of this kitchen. I'm like, I don't know if this is going to work. But I'm going to take him over to the grocery store next week and just kind of, okay, let's go through food. Okay, let's make sure you understand. What do you need for the next time? Because I'm doing this one time and then you're on your own. You know, it's, you know, try to figure out which squirrels in the neighborhood are hobblers, because, you know, you can maybe take them down. That's good. That's good city eating. Yum. Okay. For all my animal friends, I'm joking about my son killing squirrels to survive at the University of Minnesota. Just a joke.
Oh, you got
to
go with the turkeys instead.
I mean, there's a lot more meat on those. A little greasy because of the food they've been eating, but, you know.
They might fight back, too.
Yeah. You know, just put them on the grill. They flame right up. I mean. God. Yeah, Dad, we got into a rumble. With who? A bunch of turkeys. Really? the gangs of turkeys that run through Minneapolis that control the city. Are we that far away from him getting into a bear fight? I mean, the bears are coming down out of the woods now. He's going to go out there and like, I think I can take this guy. Oh, great. Let me take it. What happened? Well, he found him wrestling with a bear. Okay. Welcome to college, son. Good luck. So I got that done today. It's of course, obviously, been running around a little busy. I did talk to some friends that went to the state fair yesterday. They said the following things. First of all, empty. It was hardly empty, which I got a story coming up here about. It was like half full from bringing the news. I'll get to that a little bit later on. They said most of the people they saw were not wearing masks. Wearing masks. And they said there were a few people who clearly were, if not sick, were on the way to being sick. And particularly one who they, you know, the one friend of mine, him and his girlfriend, they were saying to me, oh yeah, no, she was sick. She was sick. And walking around, you could tell she did not look well. She was coughing the entire time. Great. Sounds like fun. The great Minnesota get together. You know, I understand that, you know, you guys didn't want to necessarily, you know, get into the whole thing with the face mask, but come on, man, you got to do a little bit better than that. And I think that you're coming back. It's coming back to haunt you. Well, you know, it's going to be a lot less people. People are talking about, hey, no line at Sweet Martha's. That's great. Yeah. But, you know, it comes with a side of Corona. I don't, if you, yeah, sure. It's great. You can get your Pronto Pup right away. But if it comes dipped in Delta, I don't want it, man. Delicious. Delicious. But I don't think we're going to go out this year, even to do the food run. I think I've kind of talked myself out of it. It's like, you know, they're smart and stupid. I'm not going this year. 952-946-6205. If you did not see the salon story this morning on the Minnesota GOP, sweet Lord. Let me just start off with it. Kayla Kang remembers being excited for her first real job, a political internship with the Minnesota Republican Party in 2017, organizing routine door-knocking and phone bank campaigns for candidates she believed in. It was the dawn of a new era for the party, the 17-year-old thought. She was ecstatic when the internship turned into a paid position just a few months later. Jennifer Carnahan, another Asian-American woman, had just been elected as the state party chair with promises of diversity and to bring new blood into the organization, which had floundered in recent years due to the financial mismanagement and a rising Democratic tide buoyed by growing numbers of young liberals moving into the state. But as she advanced in the party, Kang grew increasingly uncomfortable with the casual racism and sexual harassment which seemed to penetrate all levels of the organization. So, let's just start with that, shall we? This is the casual racism and sexual harassment that was permeating every freaking level of the Minnesota GOP. Yeah, we all knew it was there. I mean, is anyone shocked by this? I'm not shocked by this. I've been around some of these people. Please, I am not shocked by this at all. But here you are. Now you actually have Republicans themselves talking about how there is casual racism and sexual harassment. We're out of control within the Minnesota GOP under Jennifer Carnahan. Seemingly, as a matter of course, she was warned which men to avoid being alone with and which ones to avoid entirely. Jesus. And why are you being warned? Because already the leadership of the Minnesota GOP will not back you up. That is what they're really saying, isn't it? Don't go near this. Don't be alone by this guy. Don't even go near this guy. And you know why? Is because if you do get into a problem with those people, you're not going to get any support from the Minnesota GOP. You're on your own. That's the warning that they're being given. That is the warning there. Wow. Things reached a head when she began working on a competitive special Senate campaign in northern Minnesota with Spencer Krier, K-R-I-E-R. We've talked about this cat before. One of Carnahan's close associates. Carnahan, close associate. Buddy, as I like to say. A fellow field staffer at the time, he often greeted her by adopting a fake Asian accent, forcing hugs and touching her inappropriately, even though Kang told him several times that the behavior made her uncomfortable. Sweet Jesus. Wow. Wow. Let me reread that. I mean, we're going to reread a few of these paragraphs here. This guy would adopt a fake Asian accent, forced hugs and touching her inappropriately, even though she was saying it makes her uncomfortable. During an election night party, she remembered Krier making an especially egregious remark about the dress she was wearing. I'm not going to even repeat what he said. You can go read the salon story. It's just racist as heck. He basically said this with a grin. What? He continued, faking surprise at her outrage. It just means you look really Asian. Several others who witnessed these events and spoke with Salon corroborated Kang's accounts and described similar. So you have multiple people. This is not he said, she said. You have already multiple people saying, oh, yeah, all that stuff happened. Good luck with your investigations, Minnesota GOP, with your casual racism and your guys grabbing people and hugging people. Jesus. Several others who witnessed the events and spoke with Salon corroborated Kang's accounts and described similar conduct from Cryer, who would go on to become operations manager of the State before Party before sliding into a job with Arsenal Media Group, a political media strategy firm which boasts about such clients as Pizzagate conspiracy theorist Jack blah, 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 and right-wing commentator Candace Behoo. Update, Arsenal Media Group has confirmed that Cryer is no longer an employee of the company. Wow! That's how bad he is. Kang said she reported the incidents multiple times to her bosses and to Carnahan's assistant, but each time they brushed it off saying, "That's just Spencer coming this fall to Fox." That's just Spencer. What did I tell you? That's why they were telling her to stay away from this guy or only go with be around him with other people. After several tries, she gave up, and to her knowledge, the formal complaint was never recorded. Cryer did not respond to repeated requests for comment. I will stop there. Let's get a break in. I'm going to finish reading out some more of this Salon story. Yeah, it is ugh freaking Lee, but this is your Minnesota GOP. This is your Minnesota GOP right now. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Back to the Salon story. So basically what we have is we have racist comments by Cryer, which have been corroborated by not only by Kang, who they were directed at, but other people who witnessed them. Just irresponsible behavior, allegations of racism and sexism and inappropriate behavior, the derogatory comments, and just a real negative workplace environment under Jennifer Carnahan. And we also do know that Kang apparently had gone to them multiple times and actually tried to report the behavior, and yet they basically ignored it. But in the coming months, Kang says Carnahan grew increasingly angry at her and others who spoke up about similar behavior, screaming at them in public and calling them after hours to continue earlier tirades. Several other Minnesota GOP employees told Salon that they witnessed Carnahan repeatedly dress down Kang and other employees for minor mistakes and speculated that she may have been driving them away from a career in politics for complaining about the behavior of Cryer and others. She was very good at belittling people, insulting them in really personal ways, Kang said. She'd always threaten people. I can end your career in a second. Stuff like that. She was just a jackass. That's what she was. She just made you feel so small, you know. And once again, that has been corroborated by other people who also witnessed the attacks. Kang eventually did leave politics and the state. In conversations with seven current and former staffers of the Minnesota Republican Party, most of them women who requested anonymity for fear of retaliation, they all shared similar experiences of racism and sexual harassment or assault by high-level employees of the state organization. Assault. That's a crime. And yeah, likewise, all outlined a pattern of reprisal from Carnahan targeting anyone who spoke out about these and other issues within the organization, subjecting employees and even some activists affiliated with the party to repeated verbal abuse. Strict non-disclosure agreements were also a requirement for anyone who wanted to work closely with Carnahan, a fact she used as a basically as a way to silence dissent, several of her employees said. Two former staffers even described sustained harassment campaigns directed against them and others that included male staffers showing up their homes at odd hours, an apparently an intimidation tactic, and drastic measures like withholding paychecks for anyone to complain about Carnahan and her top lieutenant's behavior. Okay, stop for a second here. That's also a crime. That is a crime. You cannot purposely hold back people's paychecks. And by the sounds of this, how many counts of her doing this can we track to her? I mean, seriously, that's a crime. If people are sexually attacking people, sexually assaulting people, that's a crime. If people were trying to report it and they were being ignored, that's crime by association. But here you also have a case where the allegation is she purposely withheld paychecks from people, and that's illegal. You can't purposely do that. I don't care which business you're in. You can't do that. the state needs to officially open an investigation if they were not giving people their paychecks. That's illegal. Wow. And basically, she was withholding paychecks for anyone who complained about Carnahan or her top lieutenant's behavior. I remember this so vividly. I had to drive across town with one supervisor to fill up another staffer's tank because she hadn't been paid in months after some kind of dispute with Jennifer, Kang said. She was completely broke. The employees who spoke with Salon all said the toxic work environment was so bad that dozens of talented people were driven out of politics for good. I know the staggering number of people who left politics as a result of Jennifer Carnahan, Kang said. There's no bench of Republican talent in Minnesota right now. It's 100% her fault, another former Minnesota GOP staffer had added. If you haven't read the story at Salon, it gets worse. There are so many things. I want to make sure we step back for a quick second. Let's just say we had an allegation that Ken Martin in the DFL had withheld one paycheck from one staffer because Ken Martin was bitter and angry at that staffer for some reason. It would be front page, above the fold. Every media outlet would talk about it. Everyone in the state would be talking about how Ken Martin is out of control. Look at him abuse his own staffers. Look at that. You have multiple allegations, by the sound of it, of Jennifer Carnahan withholding paychecks from people because she just didn't like them. Every time she did it, that's a charge. I mean, you could actually charge her for every time she withheld a paycheck from a staffer. And I'm sure she thinks there's someone within that organization who will fall on a sword for her. But dear Lord, if there's any paper trail at all that points back to Jennifer Carnahan telling their payroll department at the Minnesota GOP to withhold or hold back on checks, or if she had the checks, and so henceforth, if anyone wasn't getting them, it was on her. Dear Lord. She could be going to jail for years. That's not a joke. What is a joke is that the Minnesota GOP, and this is, like I said, if Ken Martin had one tiny little minuscule of what I just stated accused of him, the media in this town, everyone would be, he'd be forced out, everybody would be there. This is just one person. Jennifer Carnahan was wildly out of control. And what the joke is that the Minnesota GOP had a meeting where they allowed Jennifer Carnahan to be the tie-breaking vote to give her a $38,000 severance package. Wow. You guys are morons. I mean, you really should have just kicked her butt out the door and said, we'll tell the state of your crimes when they come a-knockin'. Instead, it's and reminder, there were people in the Minnesota GOP who are saying, you need to give her $500,000. She's earned it. Sweet Lord, man. It's stunning how corrupt her political party was. And you have to go back to the beginning. And once again, I want to talk about one of the things that Kang said is at the beginning of this article, she said, oh, just the casual racism and sexism that just permeated everyone in the Minnesota GOP. That's not just Jennifer. Your whole party is rotten to the core. So whoever takes this party over has the all-time reclamation project. And good luck, because one thing that we have seen in the age of Trump is when you tell a bunch of racists or sexists you can't be racist or sexist anymore, they generally don't want to stop. They've been told by Trump that they don't have to scatter when the kitchen lights come on and go back under the fridge, and they don't want to go back there. So whoever takes this party over, good freaking luck. Because you've got the mess of all. This makes what Tony Sutton did with the credit cards. D- dear Lord, this is nothing. And there are just in this one, what, about 12 paragraphs from the Salon story, how many crimes, actual crimes, are described in this? Holy God. Jennifer Carnahan should not have $38,000. She should be in cuffs. And that's the truth. 952-946-6205. If these allegations are true, but the reality is the Salon story, a lot of people are backing up these stories. It sounds like multiple witnesses are saying, yes, this did happen. So good luck in court there, Jenny. Yeah, good luck there, Grand Canyon.
And keep in mind, the only guy that's thrown his hat in the ring to succeed her is Jim Neuberger. I'm sure he's going to clean things up.
Neuberger. Dear Lord. The Grand Wizard isn't interested in taking over? just asking. Just asking, is the head of Lufthansa? He doesn't want to, never mind. Never mind. Good luck. Good luck with your rotten freaking party. But hey, no, talk about how much you're more higher fiber than anyone in the DFL. Screw you. 952-946. I'm laughing all the way to the bank. I am laughing all the way to the bank. Hey, maybe you can get Mike Lindell to run for office. That'd be great. 952-946-6205. Come on back. Jay Bowler from Racket is going to join us. We'll talk about that brand new periodical. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. As everyone knows, I was somewhat heartbroken when City Pages went down. I have, over the years, had numerous of the City Pages. Roops with the Scoops. Aaron Rupar started. We started his first radio stuff, I think, was here. Now, he's way too good for us, I think. And I just. He doesn't even acknowledge I exist. But hey, I wouldn't blame him. I don't blame him personally. Anyway, we also, of course, numerous times had brought on City Pages writers to talk about stories, some of the in-depth articles. It was a great periodical, and it has died, and unfortunately, we were very frustrated about that here. But the good news is that they have the people who were behind the City Pages have come back. Racket launched this basically in a week here, and so far, they've actually had one or two exceptional stories already. Jay Bowler is kind enough to join us. He's the co-owner, co-editor of Racket to talk about the launch of the new media outlet, as well as also some of the stories that he's been working on there. They've been working on over there. Jay, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, Matt, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. First of all, so if you don't mind me opening an old wound here, you and the people behind Racket, you were working for City Pages, and then all of a sudden you got the news, oh, City Pages is going to die. Talk a little bit about that process. I mean, because I imagine you guys were pretty much one of the better news outlets here in town at that point still.
Well, thank you for the kind words about that. And I would even tweak the language a little bit and say that we got a call the morning of, and it said City Pages is dead. Oh, there was no warning. There was no sign. There was definitely no attempt by the billionaire ownership to tweak the business model in any way, shape, or form to attempt to save it. It was pretty clear that Star Tribune Media Company wanted City Pages gone, and that's exactly what they did.
Of course, in the aftermath there, when did you and your co-owners and co-editors, when did you guys start having a discussion about, you know, should we try to relaunch something on our own?
Well, yeah, we cooled our heels for a bit and kind of licked our wounds and felt sorry for ourselves and collected severance pay for it. In December, I sent a very random email to a fellow named Tom Lay, who's editor-in-chief of Defector. It's a website in New York that was the creation of a bunch of former Deadspin staff, the sports website.
Yeah.
And when their ownership got overbearing and controlling, they all kind of quit in solidarity together and started Defector. And I emailed Tom out of the blue and I said, Tom, how do we do what you guys did? And he hooked me up with their developer. It was a really fortuitous, just kind of series of events of emails, cold call emails, completely working and getting us in a good position with very little startup cost. And yeah, it's reader funded. We own it. One quarter share is between me and my co-owners. And we're hoping this model can kind of take locally and be sort of the future of how this type of news gets funded.
It is, considering the way corporate media works, and it's not just newspapers, it's radio, television, the way that works today, about the only way you do get investigative journalism is by independent media. So it's a good idea. When you thought about launching Racket, what were some of the things that you said, okay, here are some things from City Pages and our experience we want to bring over, but here are some things we want to change? Can you talk a little bit about that process?
Yeah, to be honest with you, the idea for the most part was just kind of mimic what we were doing because we were the last game in town doing that. Yeah. I mean, there used to be such a vibrant alt-weekly scene with The Rake and the Twin Cities Reader and AV Club Twin Cities. I could go on and on, but by the time we got around to dying, they were all dead already. So we kind of felt that hole, that need. And in terms of doing things differently, I mean, if there was ever sort of like a creeping apprehension, knowing that who we were owned by and what our parent company was, I mean, that's out the window because we're friends, we're coworkers, and we're doing this for us and for our readers, and that's it.
So you guys decided to launch. Talk about the name Racket. Where did you guys come up with that?
Naming things is really hard. We'd never had to name a news outlet before, but trial and error, a million different bad suggestions, and eventually M. Castle, who was the first female editor in chief of City Pages, yes, for all of I think 10 months before the canning, came up with Racket, and we all just loved it right away. It sounds noisy. It sounds a little rebellious. There have been, I will admit, dozens and dozens of people making the very original, what will your tennis racket coverage be like? But we settle on it and we like it.
I do too. I'm going to say for everyone out there, I am a member. I've subscribed to Racket. I'm going to highly encourage everyone out there to do so, because the reality is this. Sure, there are some really good journalists out there. Susan Du, of course, used to work with City Pages for many years. I like her. Brianna Bierschbach, Andy Mannix. I can go through the ones that are out there. But the reality is corporate media drives a certain narrative. And the reality is that is what stymies a lot of really big stories. I mean, my God, don't we see that today with the Minnesota GOP story here that exploded up that entire organization that was basically being withheld and being stomped down for a while before it was put out there, because there's just too many people that don't want the truth being out there. Racket already has delivered. So I do want to encourage this. That's kind of an interesting element of this, is that you're not going to have a print version, correct?
Correct. We are online only, but producing content every day. I had to correct my mom, who thought we were going to dump like 5 stories every Wednesday and just let the website sit there. But but no, new stories every day. But yeah, digital only.
Digital only, but it is, of course, obviously giving you the investigative journalism that you came to really like with City Pages, and it is there at Racket, as well as also sponsorships for them. I do also that I'm working on that. If people, you launched, what day did you launch?
We launched on August 18th.
Yeah. So a little more than a week. And it's already been spectacular. So if people want to, we're going to talk about one or two of your stories, but if people do want to go over there and become a member, what is the website there, and where the direction they need to go to get that?
Yeah, for sure. The website is www.racketmn.com. And when you get there, there's a pretty generous amount of free page views every month. We didn't want to like kind of wall people off entirely. But then we humbly, kindly ask that that anyone subscribe at, there are 3 different levels. So the first level is $5 a month or $50 a year, gets rid of the paywall entirely. Level 2, $100 a year or $10 a month, and that gets you the paywall removal, commenting privileges, early event access, merch discount code, and a few other things. And then we have a sort of a benefactor level of $1,000 a year. And we're blessed to have 10 people so far who have taken that.
Wow,
and
great.
And yeah, with that, you get a VIP party, you get free merch, and you get the clean conscience of knowing you're supporting independent, locally owned, collectively owned media.
I'm at the 100 level, so go become a member. They need help get it launched, and I can already tell you, they've already proven their weight in gold. If you don't mind, I want to talk about 2 of the stories that you guys have on hand here, but one that I think... And I said this to Brett when we started the show. There's sometimes stories that elevate themselves to public service. And if you can pull that off as a journalist, you really are doing, you're cooking with gas. someone at Racket came up with the brilliant idea that there are all these, I mean, and once again, abortion is legal here in Minnesota. You can go get that. But the reality is one of the techniques that people who are against abortion put out there is they created fake abortion clinics, which have no intention of helping you get an abortion and actually are working against your goal on this. And you guys went out there and decided to map where all the fake abortion clinics are, which is once again, goes way beyond just a journalism story. There's almost a public service to this to warn people away that you should not be going to these places because these places will not help you.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, we're not partisan. We don't subscribe to any parties, but we are pretty open in our just slant of how we view the world and our ideology. And this is a case, like you mentioned earlier, where at a traditional institutional news outlet, there would be so many just kind of fuddy-duddy managers trying to both sides the hell out of a story like this that it would become some neutered, ineffective version. But, we believe in a woman's right to choose, and we believe that these clinics, these fake abortion clinics, are evil. And we had a freelance writer who, I will say, she did not map them herself, but got the info from Unrestrict Minnesota, which is an advocacy group. But she reported the thing out, and a lot of just really chilling stuff in there. I mean, these fake clinics, which lure women who are in a vulnerable position in under the kind of sort of premise that you might be able to get an abortion there. And they lure them with pregnancy tests and with ultrasounds, but just do everything in their power to dissuade these women from getting an abortion. And they outnumber actual abortion clinics in our state 13-1. And they get a bunch of state money, about $3 million a year.
And the reality is that there's the way that they present themselves to most, you know, obviously you discover you're pregnant, you're wanting to look at what your options are. The way they present themselves is that all options on the table, when clearly that they want to drive you away from the option of having an abortion.
Yeah, 100%. There's a great John Oliver episode on them as well that focuses on the kind of national landscape. But Minnesota is just has a ton of them. And they don't do women any favors or services. And yet they don't pay taxes either because they're 501 C corp.
As a disclaimer, I just want to make sure I say this. I'm personally, because of my religion, I'm against abortion, but I also believe in a religion that everyone is judged for their own actions. So you do what you're going to do. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. That's how the world operates. The thing that makes me upset about this is the dishonesty that is in place for, as you said, vulnerable people who are looking for help, and the dishonesty that they are met with. That's against my religion as well. Trust me, that is not something my religion should be going with, is dishonesty on that kind of level. So I got to give you guys credit because, as you said, there are many news media outlets in this city and in this state wouldn't even touch this. This is actually important, and I'm going to make sure we link to this so people can see the truth out there so they know what they're getting into. I think that that's just excellent work by you guys.
Well, we appreciate that, and there's also, I think, an important component of the story is there's another map that shows where I believe the number is 8 abortion clinics that do function within the state are located, and comparatively, just a minuscule amount. And if you live outside of Rochester, Twin Cities, Duluth, you're taking off work to go get this procedure. I mean, it's grim out there if you're in that position.
Well, and also it should be mentioned, we just want you to go to something where all your options are on the table. And it's totally. The choice is up to you. Go make it on your own, but at least go to a place that all the choices are on the table, as opposed to basically being lied to the second you get in the door. And I think that that's an important thing. Dishonesty should not be the first thing that's established here when you're looking at a medical institution. I think we've learned that by now.
100%.
I want to also go to your story here. You guys had a little Minnesota State Fair coverage. You talk about the fact that a lot less crowds there, but also not a lot of masks.
No, not at all. And I mean, I will say that in the lead up to the state fair, like all the discourse was, there's no mask mandate, the virus is raging, there might be guns. So at one point it felt like it might be like the purge situation, or like a Mad Maxian type kind of scene on the ground. But what we saw was just a really downscaled version of the Minnesota State Fair. There was one booth that was called Liberty for Action, or some generic kind of just garble of words that tried to position Tim Walz as some sort of imperial dictator. But that was kind of the only thing different. I mean, yeah, there weren't many masks on people, but it was so spread out and kind of like a ghost town fair that didn't exactly feel dangerous until the giant thunderstorm came. And then it did feel dangerous, but we bailed pretty quick.
Well, and did you guys leave? Because, I mean, the question I had is I had some people showing pictures in the horticulture building. And what they showed was a packed horticulture building, no masks, or at least maybe 90% of the people without masks on. I'm like, this is how basically, you know, horror movies start, for goodness sakes. You know, it did seem like when that rain came through yesterday, it went from, okay, this doesn't seem that bad, to, oh, now we understand why the mask would probably be a good idea.
Yeah, we bailed and also had no interest in, like, packing in, like, cattle into a building. But I will say, we reviewed the Green Day show at Target Field on Monday, and that was just, you tensed up the minute you walked in. I walked down to our designated seat with my friend and colleague Keith, and it was like the Twins were in the playoffs again in terms of just the density of people, almost zero of them wearing a mask, and it gave you just kind of like in your gut just a paranoid feeling. And I think that, I mean, at Target Field, at the State Fair, we're just gonna, I mean, the government made it very clear, and businesses too, from the onset, that the needs of capital will trump all of the needs of public health or anything else. And we're so far down the road of just bowing to that notion that, I mean, I don't anticipate any future lockdowns unless things get really bad, which they definitely could.
Well, we're being shown to in the nth degree that human life does not matter when corporate profits are the most important thing. That, you know, sure, they'll put on their earnest, sad face that someone died, but the reality is they won't stop a damn thing as long as there's money involved with it, and that's just that.
Correct. And of course, our state and federal governments are complicit in that, in all the decision-making process.
Yeah. Excellent work so far. I mean, a little more than 1 week, and you guys are already hitting it out of the park. Nicely done. As you can see, go to Racket. You'll read these stories yourself. The other stories, they're putting out daily content for you. And then subscribe. You should. We need to make sure Racket stays up and running this time. And once again, now without the leash of corporate ownership, it is absolutely, so, like I said, within the first week, it's been exceptional. RacketMN.com. Racket, RacketMN.com. Jay Bowler, co-owner, co-editor. Jay, you guys come back anytime, my friend. You're more than welcome on this show.
We appreciate you, Matt. We'd love to come back.
You're more than welcome. We'll take a break. You know, I want to make sure I'm very clear about this, because I know that there are some people out there that are going to say, Matt, you're being inconsistent. No, I'm not. And if you've not heard this, once again, religious disclaimer, you do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do. I was Catholic. I'm no longer Catholic. We're still looking for a new church. We're still working on that. But the reality is that one of the things I don't like is the idea of such base dishonesty that you are literally lying to people to stop them from doing something they have a legal right to do. And even though, and once again, I want to make sure everyone hears this, because it makes Republicans' heads explode. Me and my wife have talked about this. We are both against abortion. We are both. But that only, well, first of all, that my opinion only applies to me. And I can't have a kid, so that doesn't really go any further than that. But, you know, the reality is that's just us. My religion tells me as well that we're all judged individually by our own actions on this planet. Ta-da! Henceforth, you do or don't do whatever it is you want to do. And as long as it's legal, bon appetit. That is your decision. I won't judge you. I won't criticize you. I've made my call. That's called choice. You can make yours. That being said, this article where they actually show you the vast majority of these clinics are not honest. And especially, I mean, the map they had, I mean, if I read that correctly, almost all the ones that are honest are actual, that will give you all the options on the table. Because once again, you just going into this clinic doesn't mean you're going to have an abortion. It just means at least all the options will be on the table. Most of those clinics are on the very eastern side of the state: Duluth, St. Cloud, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Rochester. And when you look at all the fake clinics that are out, especially in the western part of the state, anything up on the border, you know, they're not being honest with you. And the reality is walking in the door and then telling a person, you can't have something legally done that you can legally get done this day done. Well, that's not being honest, and that's not medicine. That's just basically you trying to push a religious viewpoint on others. Once again, my disclaimer, you do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do. It's not my, you see, religion is a personal decision. It's a personal choice. That's what it always should be. And if you are forcing your religion on other people, or if you have to be this dishonest with people to force your religious beliefs on someone else, well, your religion is crap, if I can be honest, because you can't be honest about it. Just the way it is. Needless to say, that's an excellent article. They've had a few in there as well. I highly encourage you to go check that out, as it is a very, very good thing to have these periodicals. And we are blessed right now because we are seeing the rise of online journalism that is not being controlled by corporate entities. The Minnesota Reformer, we have Cooligan on every Tuesday. He is fantastic. The Minnesota Reformer is fantastic. You have, of course, Racket now, MinPost, fantastic over there. They've got really good coverage on a lot of different things. Sahan Journal, excellent there as well. BringMeTheNews.com, very good stuff. A lot of good options out there that are now no longer just the Star Tribune or the Pioneer Press. And I highly encourage you to make those places part of your daily news reading. Hour one done. We're going to head on into hour two. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. There you go. First time doing the show, Brett?
Yeah, no kidding. My goodness.
It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We talked about the tragic loss of Charlie Watts early this week. Of course, the drummer, longtime drummer for the Rolling Stones. Beloved. By the way, a great photo I saw, because you know I'm a big fan of the Canadian band Rush, right? There was a time, this was back on, I think it was on Vapor Trail, so it'd been 2003, 2004, when they're doing that tour, where Charlie Watts came back to meet Neil Peart. Two great drummers. I mean, Charlie and Neil were very different drummers, and how they approached drumming was very different. But you could clearly see there's a great picture of them where Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson from Rush are just kind of smiling. And then the two guys are looking at each other like, you know, they kind of know, you know, there's like an respect on both sides. Great photo that they released with the tragic passing of Charlie Watts. Here is an interesting question for you, Brett. So you are the Rolling Stones. You're not young, so you only have a few more tours left. Because really, let's face it, if either Mick or Keith, well, if Mick goes down, it's over.
Yeah.
If Keith Richards goes down, I also think it's probably over. I don't think you're going to you'd be able to replace either one of them. But there's a clock ticking here. They're in their 80s now. I think they're in their 80s.
Wow, I gotta look this up. You're probably right, though, considering
the. Yeah. So they announced they're going to continue the tour. They're going to bring on a different drummer, and I'm going to presume that for everyone but Mick, they have a backup ready to go because they're not young. And let's just face it. I mean, think about your 75, 80-year-old, you know, parent or grandparent.
78.
78 for Mick.
Both of them, actually. Keith Richards.
So they're close to 80. I mean, if you have a parent or a grandparent who's 78 years old, there are plenty of times where you'll call them up and say, I'm really not going to do too much today. I'm just not feeling it. I'm not feeling too good. And so they're taking it easy that day. They're surely not getting up and doing a concert for 3 hours. Moving around the stage, playing all their favorites, even if they are in a Barca lounge or something like that on the stage. So they, you know, they're out there, they're doing it. They're trying to get as much as they can in before they can't do it. And I can understand that. But do you feel as if it's a little disrespectful to Charlie Watts, their longtime drummer, to basically just say we're not even gonna hit a speed bump here, we're just gonna keep going? I mean I think there's a lot of people that do look at that the whole band together. What's the fourth guy, the other guitarist? Not Keith Richards.
Oh, pull it up here.
Yeah, please pull it up really quick. I'm just blanking. It's not Wyman. He's gone.
Ronnie Wood.
Ronnie Wood. Thank you, Ronnie Wood. Wyman is gone. They booted him out of there because he's just creepy. he was too creepy for the Rolling Stones, which, okay. They booted him out a long time ago. But, I mean, how much longer would you have... I would have said take a month or two. You can always reschedule those shows and do them later, but I'm kind of surprised that, yeah, you know, oh, he's dead? Well... We played with him since the 1960s. Well, great. Well, we're just going to move on. Good luck.
You're 78. Why are you still doing concerts? I mean, I don't think the Rolling Stones are hurting for cash right now. I mean, unless they really enjoy doing it.
Oh, I think they do. And I think it's an obscene amount of cash. And, okay, you know, if you are at the point, I mean, how many generations of Richard's kids, grandkids, great-grandkids is he setting up for... You know, you can always talk the residuals of the songs, the music, his likeness, all this stuff. The reality is he's making enough money now to where they're going to live forever. And let's face it, a 78-year-old guy, it takes some coin to get the ladies to come over. You know, even Mick at this point, it takes some coin to, you know, continue the rock star lifestyle. I'm just kind of surprised that, give you an idea. Neil Peart dies, right? Rush is done. They've said they're not going to go. I mean, it's a three-man band, and without him, and they've had, and I think, who's the guy from the Foo Fighters? It's escaping my mind all of a sudden. Thank you. You find that for me. Dave Grohl. Grohl has said that he'd be willing to go back behind the drum kit. Of course, remember, he was the drummer for Nirvana for many years, and he's played drums on some songs for Foo Fighters as well. He said he's willing to go back behind the drums and become their drummer. And apparently there's also a family member that they've kind of wondered if they could put that person on. They said, no, we're done. We don't need to do this anymore. You know, it was a three-person band. Neil died. We're done. The Rolling Stones are like, we're playing a show tonight. Hey. I'll wear my black leather pants and in mourning of the drummer who everyone see with him. I mean, I think that is a little bit crass, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of not the band anymore if you're having to start replace members. You're becoming something different. Nothing wrong with that, but you're really not the Rolling Stones.
How would you feel if you're Ron Wood? It's like a diet. It's like, we'll pull over at a rest stop and say goodbye. Like, that's Keith and I got a show to do. Really? That's what you, that's all we matter to you? Keith, oh God. I mean, so then there's the question is, would Mick, I can't believe Keith Richards would even try to put on a concert without Mick Jagger singing.
I don't think that would work.
So the question then becomes is this. If Keith Richards, his deal with the devil that he has made, and by the way, I'll give Onion credit. The Onion, the fake satirical news site, had a great headline saying Charlie Watts confused when he shows up in heaven and Keith Richards is already there. I thought that was good. But, okay, so if Keith Richards, his deal with the devil comes on up, it comes due, and he's done, would Mick still do a show? I can't believe Mick would do that. I can't believe he would try to do a show without Keith. Maybe he would.
Maybe it's just Mick Jagger, the solo act. That could work.
Well, the band, what they do is, the original players, they're up on the front of the stage. Mm-hmm. And it's the guys that are not Bill Wyman, the bass player. Bill Wyman, the guy that replaced him, he sits in the back. They introduce him at some point. You can see them playing, but they're not part of the main entertainment. So would it be that? Would it be Mick just in the front and then the replacement Stones all behind him? I don't think people would show up for the show. Or maybe am I fooling myself? Is that really the draw is just Mick Jagger that no one else goes to see anyone else?
I think he would still draw, but... I don't think you can call them the Stones anymore. I mean, just...
Of course they would, man.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying they wouldn't.
Of course, they'll sell 1,000 jackets at every stop at what, $300, $400 a pop, man. I mean, I've got in my house, I have a Rolling Stones Voodoo Lounge Tour poster that's signed that by all four of them. Wyman was gone at that point, I believe. Or he's not there. It's not Wyman, so it's just the four of them. And it's a nice little thing, but, I think of the Rolling Stones, it's like the Beatles. it's not, there is always that story about the Beatles. I don't know if you remember that, where the Saturday Night Live thing, where they basically had Paul and Ringo, was it Ringo was guest hosting or you know, no, George Harrison came on and tried to take the money from Lorne Michaels. He came on out and said, we'll give you $100 if the Beatles come down here and perform, the remaining Beatles, Paul, Ringo, and George. And apparently the joke was then they had George Harrison. So I'm here, I'm ready to perform. He goes, no, this is for all three of you. I'm sorry. We don't want just you. Do you have the rest of the band with you? But apparently there was a discussion of actually going down and trying to do that. And at the end of the day, they just said, well, no, because they don't have John. I don't know. I'm surprised they're keeping going, period, at 78. But I'm really kind of surprised they're not even taking a stop with Charlie Watts' passing away. So I would have stopped. Oh, Mick Jagger just seems like he will drive that to the end.
95 years old, I'll wheel him up on a wheelchair and...
Don't fool yourself. He'll be 95 and he'll still be doing splits on the damn stage. I think he will, as long as he can actually give them what they want. And let's just face it, he'll still walk off with 20-year-old models off the stage at the end of that night, every night. Right! That's Mick Jagger. Well, it's not really Mick Jagger.
He could be one of those that maybe goes on stage then, once his time calls. Be a heck of a way to go.
Tell you what, let's take the break now. We'll come on back. We'll do the Minnesota coronavirus update. I got a lot of stories to get to. There are some other stories as well. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. You can tell us what you think as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. The exceptional show after mine, far better radio than this will ever be. I mean, this is just a joke, really, isn't it? coming up after me, though, listen, 6 o'clock hour, weeknights, it's Native Roots Radio, I Am Awake. Robert Pilot is kind enough to join us right now because he heard us talking about the Rolling Stones. You've got a Stone story, man?
No, it was the Beatles story.
Oh, the Beatles story.
On Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
So, People Magazine offered the Beatles to get together for $50 million in 1976, and Lorne Michaels offered him $3,000 the next week to come on. And what the backstory is, Paul and John were together watching Saturday Night Live, and they almost took a cab down to...
That's right.
To the show and collect the money.
That's right. It was before John was killed. It was they were in New York together.
Yeah, in Dakota, Paul and John, and I think they were seriously going to take a cab down there and pick up the check for $3,000 and play something. And that's just a fun backstory. But
was George
that never happened?
The George Harrison, because he made an appearance on that episode, right? Where he shows up. He was like, "I want to collect the check." Was that pre-recorded earlier in the week then, or something like that?
No, that was a later episode. So On April 24th, it's 45 years on April 24th, and it was 1976. And then George was on it, and you're right, he tried to collect the check when he was on with, I think Paul Simon was the guest also. They did a cool duet together. And then the fun thing, it was a backstage thing, and says, oh, no, we want all the Beatles, not just you.
Yeah, it's the $3,000 for all the Beatles, not just one Beatle, like $750 for one. It's a very funny little bit they did. Thank you for correcting me on that. Like you said, this show, it needs people to correct me and keep me on path. I appreciate it. I should mention...
No, love
you. Go ahead.
No, we love your show, and you are the rock of AM 950, and we appreciate you so much.
Thank you. I know on your show, I know you, Wendy, and Ogemar are going to be talking more about what happened at the state capitol, the arrest of some of the water protectors out there, and the continued fight that you've been going out there. You've gotten a lot of visibility this week. Unfortunately, I don't think there's a lot of people looking for you at this point in Minnesota government.
Right, exactly. Well, we got the whole show is going to be about that today, what happened, and we have some eyewitnesses that are coming on. Andy from MN350 is going to be our guest, and we're going to break it down for you.
All right. That's coming up in the 6 o'clock hour tonight. Robert, Pilot, and crew, Native Roots Radio, I Am Awake. Make sure you stay every night after my show. It is a great show right here on AM950. Robert, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call, my friend.
Hey, Pini Gigi, we'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, my friend. Always good to hear from Robert. Robert and I could do a show. Just, you know, he and I could host like 4 hours easy. Because he and I, there's so many things that he and I just, you know, we just easily can converse about. Baseball, music, in a heartbeat, you know, massive levels of injustice. I think we both can hit the ball a little bit on that one, too. So stay with us every weeknight, 6 o'clock. What's up at 7 o'clock after
the broadcast.
That? Broadcast, that's right. So
Brad Friedman.
We got you covered in the evening right here on AM 950. The Minnesota coronavirus update. Let's get to this. Friday's COVID update from the Minnesota Department of Health, 1,912 new cases. That number has continued to rise in Minnesota. Six newly reported deaths. All our best to all the families out there dealing with their losses. Basically, and all of the cases and all the deaths, they've happened, they are attributed to August. The state's death toll now 7,799 since the start of the pandemic. As of August 25th, the state reported that 3,299,990 people have received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine. 3,092,731 people have completed the vaccine series. That's 55.6% of Minnesota's total population, including children under the age of 12 who are not eligible for the vaccine, have completed the vaccine series. That jumps to 65.8% when excluding kids under the age of 12. And I should mention, I did want to add from the New York Times, if you factor in 18 and plus, Minnesota is the 20th best state in the union right now. 74.4% have at least one dose, 18 and older in Minnesota. 67.4% of the entire population, 18 plus, have received both doses or the one single dose and are would have considered to be vaccinated at this point. So it's important to keep those numbers because, once again, 18 over, we're well in the 70s now, which is a good thing. But still, Delta variant gets people who are vaccinated. So and they might not get as sick. They might not die at the levels of the unvaccinated, but they can carry it on to a lot of other people. We'll talk about that a little bit later on as well. Through August 26th, the number of people with COVID hospitalized in Minnesota was 590. That's up from 584 from Thursday. Of those hospitalized, 166 people are in intensive care. 424 general hospital. The spring surge saw a high of 202 patients in intensive care, 517. I have a feeling they're already saying that they're having numbers that show that there are people in Minnesota from Sturgis that are starting to get sick. And I think you're going to start seeing people who went to the state fair. I mean, we talked about Farm Fest. I'm surprised we haven't seen any direct numbers on Farm Fest with COVID numbers. But yeah, we're seeing this go as well. The 1,912 positive results on Friday were actually totaled from a total of 37,424 completed tests, creating a test positivity rate of 5.11%. According to Johns Hopkins University, Minnesota's test positivity rate over the past 7 days is 4.91, although it did drop from the 6% on Wednesday's report due to the health department releasing tens of thousands of backdated tests. So good news there. So there it is. I will say what we're looking at here, you have a sheriff who is an anti-vaxxer. He has died. You have a pastor who is an anti-vaxxer. He has died. Yeah, you know, and once again, I feel sorry for the people that are experiencing loss, but the reality is that I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick, and I don't want you bankrupt. That has been my standard since the very beginning. And by the way, a very Christian standard, if I can say. I don't want you sick, I don't want you dead, and I don't want you bankrupt for the rest of your life. And I'm sorry, I do not feel the same level of pity for a guy that ran around talking about vaccinations are horrible. What do you mean I'm sick? And he dies. I feel bad for the family, and at the end of the day, I do feel bad, but I mean, it's a very different situation from someone who was out there who did take this seriously, and unfortunately, you know, he came to an unfortunate end with COVID. So... No, it's tough. There's a story out. This was in California, outside of San Francisco, in one of the suburbs out there. A teacher without a mask, she got COVID, and she was teaching classes. 26 people in her class are sick. The rate of infection for the kids in the first two rows of her classroom was 80%. Your personal responsibility method of dealing with this crisis sucks. It sucks huge. It just does. Let's get back to the Rolling Stones topic. Matt is in Minneapolis, wanted to chime in on this. Hey, Matt, thanks for calling.
Hey, I saw the Stones the first time in 1972 on the Exile Main Street Tour in Denver Coliseum in Denver, Colorado. And that's when, you know, Brian Jones had passed away, and they had Mick Taylor there. And the warm-up band, unbelievably, was Stevie Wonder when Stevie Wonder came out with Superstition.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and not only that, me and, you know, I'm the youngest guy. I got four older sisters, and we stood in line because back then you had to get your tickets at the place. So we stood in line at Denver Coliseum all night long. We got in like the seventh row, you know, and it was $6.
I was trying to explain going to Musicland and waiting in line overnight at a Musicland to try to get tickets to a show to my kids and just completely lost the idea of it. The thing which kind of blows my mind is, okay, Stevie Wonder opened up for him. I mean, it wasn't like he couldn't have gone around and done his own arena tour at that point. The fact that he's realized that there was going to be a much larger audience than if he went with the Stones? Maybe it was.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mick always had a thing with having either soul acts or funk acts or whatever, you know, opening before them. That's why Prince got totally trashed in California, you know, by, you know, warming him up. You know, Prince almost did not go back until Andre Simone talked him into going back. They left California and came back to Minnesota because they were treated so badly.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Stevie Wonder opening for the Rolling Stones. Holy God.
You know what? This is another thing, too. This is another thing that I'm going to bring up, and I brought it up with the DJs at KFAI, is that 1972, what was the big thing going on in Travis? It was GLAMROCK, glam rock, Alice Cooper, David Bowie, blah, blah, woof, woof, you know. And so they had poor Charlie Watts, and I've got a picture of him on my Facebook site in this regalia. He had a silver satin tank top with the Stones lips in turtle rhinestones, and they put eyeliner on him.
So I mean, I wonder how many times he punched Mick for that.
I have no idea, man.
Hey, Matt, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. Holy cow. Stevie Wonder on the Superstition tour, as Superstition comes on out, opening for the Stones in 72.
You're getting your money's worth for that concert.
Wow. That's one of those that it's hard to believe. I mean, they're the ones that are manufactured today where, remember when, you know, you'll have, like, I think wasn't Elton John and Billy Joel came and toured together for a while. And so you're going to have just a tremendous amount of stuff. They played an arena tour together. And I mean, yeah, you kind of get these big acts that will go around. But I mean, that was your opening act. That's for $6. For $6. Tell you what, we'll take a break. Come on back. More of the coronavirus update. Some other stories I want to get to. Another school board meeting in Stillwater where the Howler Monkeys showed up. And Albert Lee gives us a warning. Indeed, it does. We'll take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. More on the Minnesota coronavirus update. And I'm going to dance. I am going to dance at the end of the show. It's a Friday. Why not? Day one of the 2021 Minnesota State Fair, with heavy rain clouds and the specter of COVID hanging overhead, tallied its lowest opening day attendance in at least 4 years. I got to believe this is actually a tally that's well below the years for at least 10 to 15 years. The State Fair has said approximately 61,983 people went to the fair. That's a stiff drop from 2019, the last time the State Fair was held, when 133,236 people showed up. So that's below, is that below half? Yeah, that's maybe basically close to half. Maybe a little bit less than half of the people showed, or a little bit more than half the people showed up than they did the last time they had the opening day. That was one of the new five attendance records. They did, this is on a Bring Me the News story, and I'll link to it a little bit later on. They did list the attendance for the last few opening days of the fair, and all of them seem to be over 100,000. So at 61,000, clearly the decision by the state fair to not have a face mask mandate has impacted it. And I'm going to be honest with you. I feel sorry because I was at Brianna Bierschbach from Star Tribune. She posted a picture of, she went to Sweet Martha's Cookies and she was able to get some cookies. She was out there covering something and she was able to get some cookies without waiting in line. And the reality is that there's a lot of businesses out there, these people, these state fair booths that need to have a 10 deep line to cover the cost that they have set up here. And specifically, I'd say Sweet Martha's because they are by far the largest vendor out there. I can't believe that things are going well if you have at times in the midday when they're usually, like I said, 10, 15 deep at every booth. If people are able to walk up at that point, that's going to be an interesting thing on that, on the impact on that. Some normally dedicated fairgoers worried about the recent COVID surge have said they'll be skipping 2021 together. Hello. About 150 vendors as well. Some media outlets and performers also bowed out this year. The drop in attendance is what happened in Wisconsin as well. Attendance at the Wisconsin State Fair was down 26% compared to 2019. Of course, they have, of course, canceled their 2020 fair as well. Now, once the fair is done, we're going to start seeing schools become the big problem as far as the Delta variant goes. And once again, where you go depends on how bad this is going to be. We have our first case study in the personal responsibility crap fest of a standard when it comes to kind of keep people safe in regards to mask wearing. And that would be the Albert Lea area schools down on the southern side of the state. They have been back at school for 5 days. They're already dealing with a COVID-19 outbreak. According to the superintendent, Dr. Mike Funk, the district... Got to be careful there. The district has seen 36 students in grade 6 through 12 test positive for the coronavirus, with an additional 290 students quarantined due to exposure to the virus. 36 students tested positive. All right. 36 students, 290 students quarantined due to exposure to the virus. It took the district until early October last year to reach the same threshold of positive cases, adding that the district started the school year with minimal procedures in place to prevent COVID-19, although the district was conducting daily health screenings and masks were recommended, but not required. So once again, you didn't have a mask mandate. And you can sit there and say, we were trying to be non-offensive. No, you went with the personal responsibility and you have a lot of people who are just not responsible. And that's the whole thing. And where are all the people, the howler monkeys that show up for these school board meetings when this happens? I don't expect them. They're cowards and jerks and selfish little twits. And so I don't expect them to come on out and say anything in the capacity of, gee willikers, I guess I was wrong. But I'd also, I'd be okay. Maybe you come on out and saying, isn't this fantastic? 36 students and 290 students quarantined. I don't care. Keep the school open. No, all of a sudden, the same people who helped create this mess by going to school board members and saying, I know where you live. We're going to find you and kill you. Those people, all of a sudden, when their plan blows up and I was just letting my opinion be known. It was up to the school district. They probably should have put a mask mandate in. But at the end of the day, Albert Lea, you should have stood up to the bullies. You should have not, because you got 36 students who are sick. God forbid one or two of them die. That's on you. It took the district until early October. So, due to the outbreak, let me go back to here. This, due to the outbreak, all the students in grades 6 through 12 will now be required to wear a mask through at least October 20th. Students who are now quarantined will be able to return to school beginning August 30th as long as they don't have symptoms and haven't tested positive. The mask requirement includes students participating in indoor sports while not actively participating. Fans will also be required to wear masks in indoor sporting events for swimming, volleyball, and for concerts. That's kind of a basic minimal. I would make an argument that considering grades 6 through K through 6 can't get vaccinated, I'm presuming that they're going to mask on as well. You know, Albert Lee, what makes me mad is that you guys are supposed to be a school, so science should matter. And, you know, you doing the gee willikers. We tried to go with the personal responsibility route the Republicans keep screaming about, but that was a bad call. I mean, you could have done this from the beginning 5 days ago and dealt with the bullying and you wouldn't have had this mess. Maybe this is what you're hoping for. Maybe you were hoping for sick kids and for quarantine kids because now you can go back to those clowns and say, see, we should have gone with masks in the first place. But the reality is you should have the intelligence. We'll just point to Albert Lee for the rest of the school year and saying, yeah, everyone should have a face mask on. That's where you should be. 952-946-6205. Hold on, Mike, in North Minneapolis. I'll get to your call here in a second here. The Stillwater School Board on Thursday night voted to mandate masks in the district's elementary and middle schools. The new policy, which takes effect on August 30th and is intended to prevent the spread of COVID-19, requires all students, visitors, and district employees to wear a mask inside facilities that houses pre-K through 8th grade, regardless of whether they've been vaccinated. Exemptions will be available for students with physical or educational disabilities. Masks may be removed to eat and during certain activities. All right. It takes effect, intended to prevent, once again, I don't know if it's a mask mandate. Masks are recommended but not required for students in 9th grade or higher. That's what the Stillwater policy is. Well, that's not a mask mandate. Masks must be worn on school buses by all students through grade 12. No masks are required for outdoor activities. Even if you're in a crowded stadium, Stillwater has a good football team, doesn't they? Don't they have a good high school football team out there?
It's a big school, and they have some money, so
usually they do. I mean, they're usually a powerhouse, I thought. Well, maybe I'm showing my age. But, you know, Friday Night Lights, you're going to have packed stadiums out there. I hope you have, even if it's outdoors, I'm hoping you have face masks out there. If it's, you know, butt cheek to butt cheek out there in the stands.
Oh, I doubt that from doing football games last year even. Yeah, no one's wearing a mask at those things.
The policy will be revisited at the beginning of each academic quarter. I got news for you. Your policy about 9th through 12th graders not having to wear masks, that's going to be revisited in a week when all of a sudden you have a whole bunch of 6th, 9th through 12th graders. That's not going to wait till the next semester, okay, or quarter. We want to err on the side of safety and what's right for our kids during this very complex, very challenging time. Our priority is to keep kids in school and learning. Well, then you should have everyone, including the 9th through 12th graders, I should say, wearing the face mask. The decision comes as a highly contagious Delta variant coronavirus is driving nationwide surge in infections. The raucous school board meeting began with a contentious public comment period during which 5 people spoke in favor of the policy, 8 against it. Stillwater resident Wally Peterson told the board he pulled his 2 boys out of Stillwater Area Public Schools after the mask mandate was proposed, calling it dangerous. "You forced us to find a school where people are more reasonable in line with our beliefs," Peterson said. Of course, when his kids get sick, I guarantee. Do you think he's going to be saying, well, personal responsibility, hey, we didn't get sick? Or he's going to be saying, why did the school allow my children to get sick?
Can we be honest? If his name is Wally, I kind of doubt he's the parent of actual school age. I could be wrong on that, but that's not usually the name of someone.
Wally Peterson?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I will say this. I mean, of course, I mean, personal responsibility. If your kids get sick because they went to mask, you know, anti-mask, Petri dish, Delta variant, pass along like a buffet at OCB, heaven, if you are there, then when your kids get sick, stop whining. Stop complaining, Wally. Just suck it up and realize you created this. Don't act like a victim. Don't act like anything. Just own it and stop bothering us. God forbid. Pam Ryder, another Stillwater resident and a former teacher, advocated for the mask mandate, telling the board its opponents were well-meaning people. No, not really. No, actually, no, I disagree with you on that one, Pam. But they may not have all the science at their fingertips. Oh, they don't, though. They hate science. No, they don't. They're not even looking at this. I did a Google search and it told me I'm right. Like I said, you want to put your kids in jeopardy, fine. But when your kids get sick, stop acting like a victim. You did this. Look in the mirror, blame yourself. That's all you have to do. The board chairwoman, Bev Petrie, halted the meeting for 5 minutes before the board's 5-1 vote to adopt the new policy because members of the crowd repeatedly jeered school board members when they debated the measure. Yeah, all right. Yeah, I'm supposed to take you seriously, you freaking howler monkeys. The meeting was briefly interrupted again after the vote as some of the gallery shouted their disapproval at board members, some threatening to pull their children from the district. Bon voyage! Good luck going to Petrie U, wherever you end up out there. Stillwater, Georgia, more than a dozen other districts in the Twin Cities moving to implementing a mask recommendation. Like I said, if you want to go on out there, if you want to be that person, fine. Then when your kid gets sick, own it. Own it. Don't come back and say, it was them. They owe me money or they owe me an apology. No. You got the people sick. You did it yourself. Good luck. I hope your kids survive. I hope the kids, your kids survive your ignorance. I hope they do. 952-946-6205. Let's change subjects once again. Mike is in North Minneapolis. He's story about working at a Stones concert in 72, was it?
No, actually, at that time, I was not working in the stagehand profession, but I was just graduating from high school, and before high school graduation, I was part of a group that camped out at Met Center overnight to get the tickets for the Stones, and I wound up not being able to go. Two of my brothers and all of my friends got to see the Rolling Stones, and what had happened was before high school got out, I won an audition at the Cricket Theater for a part in the Basic Training of Pablo Hummel, a play that they had going on, and one of the performance nights was the night of the Rolling Stones, and everybody that went there told me about how they yelled so much for Stevie Wonder to come back. He did three encores, and he forced the Rolling Stones into running right up against the Bloomington Concert Ordinance, the Midnight Ordinance, where you can't play after midnight, and so they could only play for about 56 minutes. So I missed that show. But in 1977, I got to see the Stones come back through here again. And this time, the opening act was Rufus with Chaka Khan in front of him. So I didn't feel too bad because I got to see a really great show that night. Chaka Khan was excellent.
I watched Hulu's Summer of Soul documentary. Have you seen that yet?
Not yet.
You got to see that. Stevie Wonder just annihilates the crowd. I mean, my God, was he good. And he just, it was.
Well, I got a picture with Stevie Wonder later when he came back to town. Because when he came back to town, I was like, I remembering that Rolling Stones business and not being able to see him. And then when he came back, the guys, because we did something for him, they asked if we wanted to take a picture with Mr. Wonder. And I said, no, we really can't do that. You know, we're not supposed to. And then Stevie says the magic words, I insist.
Hey, there you go. Thank
you're the boss. You're going to the building for the night. You got us too. So
what Stevie
somewhere
wants?
Somewhere in my computer file, I got Stevie Wonder picture with me and one of the other guys. So made up for not seeing him.
Great.
That's for sure.
A great memory. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. Yeah, I saw Summer of Soul. Have you seen that, Brett, on Hulu?
I have not yet, no. Unfortunately, I don't
get
Hulu.
Holy God, is that good. And the story is this was concerts that were happening in New York, and the footage is all there, and it was just never been seen. It's been sitting in someone's basement. The Stevie Wonder footage alone is unbelievable, and this was years before this. And I just sort of say, and maybe that's why I'm kind of like, wait a minute, Stevie Wonder opened up for the Stones. Dear Lord, man, you go watch Summer of Soul. I could watch Stevie Wonder in concert. You know, I mean, I almost wish I was blessed to do that. To see that. I mean, it just the Summer of Soul is just an amazing concert video. You have to see it. And just the concept of him before the Rolling Stones, and you know, saying to yourself, okay, at that point, the Rolling Stones had about 3 or 4 hours worth of quality top 10 hits already. I mean, they were coming off Altamont, and I know they were trying to, you know, kind of get back into the mainstream a little bit with that, but still. Wow. Sometimes, if I had a time machine, where are you going to do? I'm going to go solve this crisis. I'm going to stop this war. I'm going to do this. And I'm going to go, I got, you know, Stevie Wonder and the Stones, dude. I'm sorry. What was the best show again? San Francisco? Okay, off we go. Time machine away. Doctor Who? Dr. Matt. 952-946-6205. I'll take a break. Come on back. Some sad news, but probably expected news in regards to the state scores for kids from last year. We'll get into that really quick before I start doing some dancing. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Matt commenting. By the way, you can watch the show it's radio for your eyes. We stream this show on the AM 950 Facebook page, also the Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show page. Matt commenting on the Progressive Citizen X side of things. Keith Richards will outlive every one of us, whatever God you believe in, Keith. This kind of sounds angry. Whatever God you believe in, Keith will take as many drugs and outdrink all of us. I bet he will go to Mick's funeral. He outlived Davy Jones, for Christ's sake. That's actually a good point. He did. Davy was not exactly living the clean life per se either. But Keith Richards. Charlie Watts gets there. What are you doing here? I was playing. Never mind. 952-946-6205. Minnesota students' scores on statewide standardized tests fell precipitously in spring of 2021, following more than a year of distance learning and disruptions due to the COVID-19 pandemic, according to results released Friday by the Minnesota Department of Education. Roughly 44% of students met state standards in math, down from 55% in spring of 2019 when tests were last administered. Just over 52% of students scored as proficient in reading, compared to 59% in 2019. The results of the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment provide a first snapshot of the effects of the pandemic on Minnesota students since the test, which are the only assessments offered statewide, were canceled in spring of 2020, and the picture this year is incomplete. More than 20% of eligible students opted out of the test. And that's another thing, too. You have to understand that there's a lot of people that just decided not to take the test this year. And I don't blame them. I mean, I talked to the teachers I know all said that, you know, this has been the last school year going through the pandemic, you know, the beginning of the pandemic in early 2000 to go to where they shut down the schools. They had to frantically put together some sort of online curriculum, which is not what these teachers were ready to do. And even when they got into fall of the 2020 school year, that that even with the heads up, I mean, this was not something that they were comfortable with. It was prepared for. And the problem that you have is that when it comes to online education, you're only as kind of as good as being when it comes to supervising the kids and making sure the kids understand it and getting the concepts and working their way through it as the, kind of the parent that's there in a remote learning environment is willing to help make sure the kid is online, make sure they're in the class, make sure they're getting it. And that's a tough thing. And it's not, that's not necessarily criticism of the parents. It is we live in a world that was not prepared for this in any capacity. And it's one of the things where I think a lot of people were anticipating it. I know that the numbers were down, and I've actually heard there's going to be, because of this year, there's going to be a real gap that generally in any school year, say you just take the seventh graders, right? There's already a gap between the smartest kids with the curriculum that's been developed in the class and the kids that are, you know, kind of lagging behind. There's already this long stretch between the two of them. And the reality is it's now they're saying it's even worse. It's a lot worse at this point. Minnesota's test scores had improved a little in the years before the pandemic, despite growing urgency around the closing of the state's worst in the nation racial disparities in academic opportunity and achievement. Students of color who are less likely to have access to high quality remote instruction, technology, and extra academic support saw the steepest decline in test scores this spring. And that's, I don't think that's too much of a surprise. In line with the national trends, losses were greater in math than in reading. Fewer than 20% of Black and Indigenous students in Minnesota scored as proficient in math, a decline of more than 9 percentage points in both groups. Among Latino students, about 21% met or exceeded state standards compared to 31% in 2019. The percentage of white students who received proficient scores fell 12% to about 52%. The data shouldn't motivate us to act with a sense of urgency, making decisions to get back in the track. I can understand schools wanting kids in class. But then if you're going to go down this path, put freaking masks on every kid. For God's sakes, put masks on every kid. Indoor, outdoor activities, just put the mask on the kid. I mean, I can buy it. I can buy it. We want to have the kids in class. But then let's make sure that the environment is as safe as possible and selfish jackasses aren't out there just trying to make everything worse. Because I can tell you, like in Albert Lea, things just got a lot worse. And that's the beginning of the sick kids, the beginning of the quarantine kids in that school district. Let's talk about those numbers on Monday. Speaking of which, it's a Friday. You guys have a nice weekend out there. Whatever you're going to be doing, we'll be back for a full week of shows next week. The Stones taking us out today. What we got?
Indeed, Start Me Up.
So I can play it. Start Me Up. There you go. I'm dancing on the cameras. You have a good Friday, good weekend. Until Monday, see ya.